Hey everyone, this is Catherine Spires bringing you some mini episodes of Smart Mouth. You can also join the fun on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast, on Facebook in the private Smart Mouth group, and on Twitter at Smart Mouth Pod. And the newsletter, which is full of contributions from food writers around the world, is at smartmouth.substack.com. So, like I just said, we're going to do some mini episodes and we're going to do them about soda pop. And my guest for all of these, whether it's two or three or four or whatever, is my fellow podcaster, my business partner, Drew Mackey, who can also be found at Gayest Episode Ever and Singing Mountain, two excellent podcasts. Hi, Drew.
Hello. Am I your first repeat guest?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, because there was Michelle who kind of did the same thing.
Okay, good. So I have to take out Michelle. Okay.
Right. You guys are in a fight to the death.
Got it.
Smart Mouth supremacy.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah.
So how are you doing your podcast? How is Gayest Episode Ever recording now that you're quarantined?
Well, it's fairly easy because I'm quarantined with my co-host. So we just talk to each other every day, all the time anyway. So now we just put mics in front of ourselves. And it's a lot of fun. But this little remote recording we're doing is a nice little test out for when you come on our show and talk about Absolutely Fabulous.
Yes, which I'm excited to do and which we've been planning to do for years. And now we finally very much have the time
and do it. no excuse not to. Yeah, we all have the equipment. So,
Yes, exactly. Okay, I'm calling it Soda Pop, partly because it's kind of an homage to my father, who actually called it Sody Pop. That's funny to me still.
That's so cute.
Also because it is cute. I don't even want to talk about whether it's called soda or pop or whether it's called Coke or tonic.
I'm so glad you said that because if I had to sit through you telling me that, I just don't think that would make for interesting podcasting, right?
I think everyone's had that discussion, right?
Yeah.
Probably around when they were 20 years old.
Yeah.
And my hope is that by the time they turned 21, they were over it. We know that we have different words for it. End of story.
Yeah, there's not a whole, it's like the whole GIF thing. Like you should never, remember when people used to argue about that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was a hostile workplace.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my God, you're so right. Good thing we're only each other's workplace.
And our dogs.
Oh yeah, and our dogs, our coworkers. Actually, have you seen those Twitter threads about say something your pet has been doing during the quarantine, but call them your coworker? My coworker threw up on me.
Oh no. Did she really do that?
Matilda has not thrown up on me yet.
Okay, good. Okay,
but
good.
There's still time.
There's nothing but time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what I want to do today is kind of go through like a general history of soda pop.
Okay.
And then I have asked listeners to tell me what their favorite sodies are.
Okay.
And we'll go through some of the more popular in future episodes and talk about the specific histories of those.
That'll be interesting. It is odd that I am your guest for this because I probably hate soda more than anyone else I've ever met in my life.
All of them?
I don't like it. I stopped drinking soda like 15 years ago. And if I ever have some in like a cocktail, like a Jack and Coke or something, it actually hurts my mouth. They are so sweet. They are, all you taste is sweet. I find them really gross actually. But also I'm a weirdo who doesn't like sweet things.
That's interesting. Do you know that gif of that small, maybe not quite a toddler, I think drinking Coke for the first time at McDonald's, and her head rolls back in her eyes, and then she immediately goes back. Her head rolls back in her eyes. You know what I meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, I'll post that so that people can see it if they haven't seen it yet. That's interesting. But they all taste so different. How do you not like any of them?
I guess something, if it's the only mixer I would ever use is like sparkling water because they just don't have, they all taste too sweet for me. Is there any soda that's not cloyingly sweet?
Well, actually, I'm thinking about 7-Up is supposed to be like crisp and refreshing.
Sweet.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
Fair enough. It
just tastes like sugar water to me.
Yeah, I guess if you haven't had it in 15 years, then it would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, but I grew up drinking it as much as you or that little girl or anyone else.
Which one in particular?
We were a Coke family. We were not a Pepsi family. I don't know how a family decides that it's one or the other. We were a 7-Up family. We were not a Sprite family. Mountain Dew was garbage. Like Mountain Dew was just something that like our family wouldn't even tolerate. And occasional root beer. That's it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. My grandma keeps her house stocked with Fresca, which I actually like. It's grapefruit soda.
Is that what it is? Didn't know that.
Yeah. So that one's fine, but she also keeps her house stocked with diet root beer.
Why?
Let me tell you, there's nothing more upsetting.
What do you even do with that?
I don't know, like hold your nose as you drink it. It's so upsetting. I really like root beer. Diet root beer? No, thank you.
So,
not into it.
Yeah, diet sodas in general are something that are sort of baffling to me. And I never really encountered until I moved to LA and worked in offices and just watched people chug Diet Coke all day.
Yeah, which I do. There's no evidence to support this, but I do believe that Diet Coke must be the most addictive one because we all know how horrible it is for us. And it's the one that like people cannot stop drinking.
Why is it so bad for us?
Well, that's my personal point of view about like the more man-made chemicals that are in a food, the worse it is for you.
Right. Okay.
So it depends on your definition of healthy. For me, I think it's unhealthy. And I have definitely had a Diet Coke almost every day in the last 2 weeks.
Really?
So, yeah. I don't know why. It's not that I want to be caffeinated. I would like to go to bed. Oh, depression during a quarantine.
Depression.
Anyway.
And anxiety.
Yep. A lot of that. So the entire reason for carbonated beverages has always been about trying to recreate naturally carbonated spring water, which is a thing that happens. It's always been considered a health tonic for as long as there's been written history in the Western world. People have been freaking out about springs and their mineral waters, and sometimes it happens to be naturally carbonated.
Okay. I don't think I knew that.
Okay, now you do. That's good. That's what I'm here for. Oh. Then there was this guy in 1767 named Joseph Priestley. He was in England, and he sort of invented man-made carbonated water, which is basically just infusing water with a ton of carbon dioxide, which is CO2, and that creates bubbles.
Okay.
And just 4 years later, in 1771, there was a chemistry professor in Germany called Torbern Bergman, and he figured out an almost identical process. And I think that's of note, even though he was 4 years later, because the German connection is why we also have the word seltzer, because Seltzus is the name of a mineral spring in Germany.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So that's... Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So as we know, sodas are also called soft drinks, meaning in opposition to hard drinks.
Mm-hmm.
So fun but non-alcoholic drinks, which actually wasn't always true.
Really?
Yeah. So there's some evidence of like in Paris in the late 1600s, people were selling lemonade, like street vendors selling lemonade was pretty popular. And they, as carbonation became more popular, they started carbonating. And then as we go in through the 18th century, the 1700s, carbonated beverages became slightly more popular and they were still always marketed as a cure to an illness, whatever ails you, essentially. And this was big with the traveling doctors, aka snake oil salesmen.
Yes.
They would just carbonate anything and be like, yeah, it'll fix you up right.
did they actually fix anything? Like, we still kind of think that they're good for indigestion or heartburn or something. Is that even true?
I think the carbonation makes it true for indigestion. Yes. But
it's not fixing your gout. It's not fixing your plague.
No, but some of the ingredients that they would put in them did cure something, but we'll get to that in a minute. So the sodas, pops, they were mostly sold at pharmacies.
Okay.
And pharmacies started becoming more popular around the 1800s, at which point you did not need a license or any particular education to hang out your shingle and say that you were a pharmacist. But I read articles about it that I thought made the excellent point that if you are a bad pharmacist, you're going to be run out of town pretty quickly anyway.
Because people would die.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
People wouldn't care for that. And you know the phrase, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down?
I've seen Mary Poppins, yes.
Yeah. So I couldn't figure out anywhere that phrase had been used before that song was written for Mary Poppins. But that's kind of the basic idea between flavored sodas.
Hmm.
Behind flavored sodas, sorry. You would have medicine, it tastes nasty. So you mix it in a carbonated beverage and you add some fruit flavor.
Huh. That's remarkably how early college worked, only with cheap booze rather than medicine. But yeah, that totally makes sense.
See, it's just something we innately know as humans. I did not know that Alka-Seltzer has been manufactured to fizz because that fizziness takes away the medicinal flavor of it.
I did not know that either. Why is it still why does it still taste like garbage?
It would taste more like garbage.
Okay, great. Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some popular flavors in the beginning in the 1800s at these pharmacies were cherry, lime, pistachio.
Oh my God, I want to try that.
Interesting, right?
Yeah, that might not be terrible.
It might not. You never know. So let's talk about some of their early names. I talked about the seltzer. Soda fountains, soda shops, and soda water fountains were all terms used in the 1820s. Mm-hmm. By the 1840s, it was soda counters, as in they added a soda counter to the drugstore.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. And starting in the 1840s, people were getting used to this idea a lot more because specifically of sarsaparilla.
What is sarsaparilla?
It's a plant. It's kind of like a vining plant.
Okay.
That at some point people said could cure your syphilis.
Bet it didn't. Sure didn't.
I definitely think of sarsaparilla as being an Old West thing, and I don't know if that's only a joke from movies or if it really was like the one non-alcoholic drink you could get at Old West bars.
That is what I think about it too. Also, my only other reference is there's a Full House where Stephanie loses a spelling bee because she forgets that there's a silent R in sarsaparilla.
See, if we kept our Western accents, we'd still say it that way. Sarsaparilla.
Sarsaparilla. Much better.
It's got a lot more flavor that way.
I drink that.
Yeah. So the reason that pharmacists continued to be the main purveyor of soft drinks was because they were chemists. Chemists. I keep misspeaking. I think it's very clear that I haven't talked to a lot of people lately.
There, yes. They were chemists,
sometimes very talented ones. They were trusted as much as medicine was trusted in the 1800s.
Okay.
They knew how to infuse water with carbon dioxide, etc. Here's another reason, though, why these soft drinks became so popular. It wasn't just the flavoring. It was also because most of these early soft drink recipes included drugs.
Like specific ones per drink or just like general, like...
Funny you should ask that because it depends. So, okay, a lot of them had caffeine and or cocaine, usually caffeine and cocaine in one.
Awesome.
And in the 1800s, really until through the early 1900s, stimulants were considered good. If it stimulates you, it's good.
Okay.
And when you think about it, I don't know why cocaine is seen as so bad when caffeine isn't. Probably has to do with who lobbied for it the most successfully or something.
Probably. I don't know what the long-term, like, I didn't take chemistry, so I can't talk about this, but yeah, it makes sense.
Alcohol was another popular additive to soft drinks.
still is. Do they consider that medicine also?
Yeah, in that way that they pretended, obviously during the Prohibition, we know that a lot of people went to drugstores to get their fix and call it medicine. I guess even before that, medicine was taxed, has always been taxed at a lower rate than alcohol. Mm-hmm. So if you bought it at the drugstore, then it was cheaper.
Okay.
Other popular ingredients in soft drinks were morphine, opium, and heroin.
Just over the counter at the local pharmacy, huh?
Yeah, here's what I've decided. I can't be the first person to decide this, but reading all my sources for this, I think everyone from like 1855, when cocaine was first isolated, until about 1930, everyone in America was just walking around high off their butts, just absolutely zonked.
That would explain the 20s.
Yeah, it really would. And I think a lot of people do know that cocaine use was pretty popular in the 20s. But I think even before that, everyone was a drug addict. A big part of that was the Civil War and men coming back with injuries that there weren't any, you know, prescription medicines for. So they had to self-medicate, usually in the form of opium. And it's interesting because I think a lot of people were on cocaine and a lot of people were on opium. So there was like two different energy levels going on in America. So the Pure Food and Drug Act in 1906, we talk about on the show a lot because it had to do a lot with butchering, But it also was the first time that they put the government put restrictions on what could go into beverages. Mm-hmm. So this was the first time where if they put opium or morphine into a beverage, they would actually have to say so and or label it if you bought a bottle of it. Before that, they were just throwing together whatever they felt like doing. They would.
And you wouldn't necessarily know buying it exactly what you were imbibing?
Yeah, I think you would just know whether it felt good or not.
Okay.
For instance, who knows whether the first person who did this knew it was a trick or not, but cocaine and caffeine together were the most popular like combo for these soft drinks. And they were often touted as either like a pick-me-up in the morning and or headache treatment. And it is true that caffeine can reduce headache pain.
Yeah, doesn't Excedrin have caffeine in it?
Right, exactly. Right. So, you know, you would drink the caffeine, you would drink the cocaine because of your headache. It would go away. And then the next morning you would have a headache again. So you would go back and get more.
Right. And slowly addict yourself to cocaine.
Yeah, exactly. Because we know what withdrawal is now.
Right.
Oh, but so there really wasn't like broadly a social stigma about getting cocaine. You know what this reminded me of actually is that there is a lullaby that my grandma, who grew up in rural Washington State, would sing to us. Mm-hmm. It's not really a lullaby because it's kind of fast paced, but
because whoever wrote it was on cocaine.
So a lot of her family was from Spokane, Washington. And this is the song, just one verse as best I can remember it. It goes, walking through Spokane on Main, a wishing I had some cocaine. Oh, honey, have a on me. Oh, honey, have a on me.
So they were, at that point, they weren't just drinking it. They would have had to be snorting it too, right?
Yeah. They you know, cut to the chase.
Maybe this came up in your, maybe you're going to tell me this anyway. When did cocaine become something that was not strictly drunken and started to be snorted in powder form? Do you know?
I don't know.
Interesting.
I mean, I think right away that was also another option.
Okay.
So starting in 1855.
Okay. That would make sense.
Don't you think that's something that's a song that my grandma would sing to all 14 of her grandchildren?
I think it's super charming. And as a kid, that would not mean a thing to you. And that's something you look back when you're probably when you get to college and you're like, oh, okay. What a fun time.
Oh, goodness. So lemon was another early popular flavor. And it is surmised that that's because everyone was already familiar with lemonade. And lemon syrups were, before they put the carbonation into it, lots of medicines would be mixed into lemon syrup. Mm-hmm. In addition to the other flavors that I mentioned before, a little bit later when like soda fountains started to establish themselves, it expanded into orange, vanilla, cherry, and mint. Those became the other most popular flavors.
Have I ever had mint soda? I don't think I have.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I haven't. I have a bottle of Green River soda in my fridge right now because I hardly ever see it. And I distinctly remember having it on Vashon Island at the one movie theater there in, or maybe it wasn't Vashon because I don't know if they ever had a movie theater, in the 1980s when my dad took me to see Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom because he had no sense and took me to see scary movies too much.
Wait, how old were you?
When did it come out? I think I was only like 4.
That's probably too young for Indiana Jones. Yeah.
I think so. Especially that one.
What did Green River soda taste like? Like mint?
No, I'm only saying that because it was green.
Okay. I have another question. And again, if this is something you're going to get to, apologies. But did you find any reason why lemonade is like in California, lemonade is usually like lemon juice and water. But like in New Zealand, it's like 7-Up is lemonade. Do you have any idea like how that separation happened?
No, I don't. I mean, I do know that people were making carbonated lemonade in France as early as like the late 1600s.
Okay.
So I imagine and knowing, I feel like carbonated lemonade like went east. Mm-hmm. Whereas like in America, they didn't know about that until later.
I'm good with this version of history. Yeah. Okay.
Because I think in most places, if you order a lemonade, you'll get it sparkling.
Really? Okay.
Most places in the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do think so. So root beer, which we'll discuss in another episode, first came on the market in 1876, and cola flavored beverages were first introduced in 1881, which, given what we've been discussing, shouldn't be a surprise because the cocaine thing so popular. And it was, they were sometimes using the powder, but, you know, figuring out how to get high off of like the cola leaves also. Just trying to figure, strip that plant of all of its properties and get as high as possible off of it.
I actually don't know much about the cola plant. What else do we get from the cola plant?
Not much.
Okay.
So there was a pharmacist in the U.S. called Jacob Bauer, and in 1888, he started the Liquid Carbonic Company. And this was basically enormous tanks of carbon dioxide initially. And then it moved on to selling the entire soda fountain setup. So he would sell that to people and they could go into business for themselves as a soda jerk. Stop it.
I have so many questions, but I don't want to pepper you with questions. As I'm listening, I'm like, wait, why did they call them jerks? Did they actually have to like jerk a lever to make the soda come out?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty non-sexy reason, yes. Okay. So yeah, he would sell like the whole setup, a little like the recipes. You could get your own standalone or set up in the corner of a pharmacy. And at first you would have your syrups and you would add to that phosphate and carbonated water. And by this point, the syrups could be store-bought and the companies that made them would supply the syrup dispensers with their logo on them, which is something we still see to this day, is the idea of having the logos on dispensers.
Oh, like at a fast food restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then pretty quickly after that, the soda jerks were buying the completed soda. So rather than buying the syrup and mixing it yourself, you would just buy the whole soda.
Okay.
And then after that, like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, the big guys, they would actually make the entire soda fountain emblazoned with their logos all over and give it to the pharmacies for free.
So like a Coca-Cola branded soda fountain for Coca-Cola products, and everyone asks, Coca-Cola knows the brand name Coca-Cola.
Yeah, exactly.
Smart.
So this is like progress, right? Except for that it put a lot of people out of jobs. Because now there was no recipe making in the store. It was all like completely just sent to you. Which is, so I think, part of the reason why it became a less charming institution. There's hardly any soda fountains now.
Yeah. There was one at my hometown pharmacy growing up. Wapples Pharmacy had an active soda fountain when I was a little kid.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
My grandma used to take my mom there for ice cream sundaes.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that a lot. So here are two sodas that no one on Instagram claimed as their favorite sodas, but I do want to mention a couple things about them anyway. One of them is Pepsi. No one said Pepsi was their favorite.
That's kind of surprising, right?
I don't know. I've always thought of, like, I've always been confused by its existence because I feel like it's like the lesser Coke.
I feel like that too. I think my brother liked Pepsi and he thought it was cooler. Like, kind of like how Coca-Cola was the Nintendo and Pepsi was like the Sega and it was like edgier somehow. Okay. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, two things about Pepsi is that when it was first created in 1893, it actually did not have caffeine in it. The creator of it wanted to create a drink that didn't have a stimulant in it.
How did that go for them?
Not well. The other thing is that Pepsi, when it was first created, was called Brad's drink.
Oh, that sucks.
I don't know about the name Pepsi, though. I feel like even before I knew it was medicinal, it sounded medicinal to me.
Yeah, because of like Pepto-Bismol, I guess. That's what I associate it with. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Brad's drink. So, I don't know.
Don't name it. Was it named after the person who invented it?
His last name was Bradford or something like that.
Yeah. Don't name things after yourself. Your last name is not necessarily good.
Another one that no one claimed that I was actually surprised about was 7-Up.
Huh,
no one claimed 7-Up.
That's very surprising to me too.
Yeah. Here's what I think is important to know about 7-Up is that the original recipe contained lithium.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, straight up the drug for mental disorders.
How much was in it? Like, what would be enough to like affect someone's mental disorders?
Well, let me tell you. It was created actually pretty late in the game, 1929, and its first name was Bib Label Lithiated Lemon Lime Soda.
Terrible name.
Yeah, it's a mouthful, but it did have lithium essentially right in the name.
Right. Did people actively use lithium for the same reason we use it now back then?
Yeah, and a lot more.
Oh, okay.
It was a downer, essentially. I shouldn't say downer, more of a mood stabilizer.
Okay.
Why they ended up calling it 7-Up, there's a ton of theories about them, but no one knows for sure. but even after it became 7-Up, lithium was always the main point of all their advertising campaigns.
Until when?
Well, so their phrase was from 1929 until 1950 was 7-Up takes the ouch out of grouch.
that's not terrible, I guess. Like, yeah.
I mean, you get the point.
Yeah, I understand that. That's not terrible branding. Okay.
They wanted to know that it would mellow you out. It's kind of the opposite of caffeine and cocaine.
Right.
In 1950, research finally came out that maybe you shouldn't be taking lithium recreationally.
Good. I'm still so surprised no one picked that, just because of the existence of the 7 and 7. I feel it's like common enough that people would have reason to drink 7-Up more often than they would Sprite or whatever.
Man, I kind of think that 7 and 7 might be kind of a country thing.
Country thing, really?
Yeah. Yeah, because I didn't know about it until relatively late, and it was always people from rural areas who had 7 and 7s. And you, sir, are from a rural area.
Hay and cows and apricots, yep.
And 7 and 7s.
How funny.
Yeah. That's just my opinion. If anyone else is an urbanite who's always enjoyed 7 and 7s, please let us know.
yell at Catherine on Twitter.
Yay, I love it. So in 1950, when 7-Up had to change the marketing, for a long time, they called it the Un-Cola. Do you remember that phrase?
I do remember that.
Yeah. So not the first person, but their most famous campaign using the phrase the Un-Cola, their spokesperson was a guy named Jeffrey Holder, who was most famous for being the villain in the movie, the Bond movie, Live and Let Die.
Okay.
He was Trinidadian American, and they made tons of these ads. And I guess from like the 70s through the 80s, that was like an American icon, essentially. The 7-Up ads with Jeffrey Holder in them.
I don't recall those. I do recall the tagline.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. But I found some of them.
Are you sure you want that soft drink?
Why?
A 7-Up might be nice.
Why?
I like it.
Why?
7-Up is light and refreshing, crisp and clean, and no caffeine. Never had it, never will. All of these other soft drinks have caffeine.
Why?
Why? Why? Good question.
Don't you feel good about 7-Up?
Okay, I have a business idea that I won't do, but I think it's such a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
A soda fountain and bar together, one business. Essentially, let's do away with the pretense.
Mm-hmm.
Because we love booze.
Mm-hmm.
We love sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Spiked milkshakes are incredible.
Right.
But I think there can be a lot beyond spiked milkshakes, and at my soda fountain bar, you wouldn't have to have spiked anything. You could have just like a cocktail, or you could have just a soft drink.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think like having kind of a soda fountain-y setup, but having it be a full bar and having it serve like hamburgers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like actually simple and straightforward. And most of its sales would be in alcohol, which as we all know is how restaurants make most of their money.
I support this idea. Also, you could capitalize on the fact that if you had the ability to make your own sodas there, like because of SodaStream, people have made all sorts of weird sodas at home. You could have someone come in and do like craft sodas and make them weird and complicated and a really interesting mixer for like whatever booze you want to drink.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be like as homemade as possible, as old fashioned as possible.
I would totally go there and have a guy in suspenders serve me something weird.
See, that's what I can't decide. Would it be in suspenders or would we like make it totally contemporary?
Oh.
Because I have a feeling that a lot of straight men won't go to like a soda fountain if it has that kind of branding.
Right. Well, they would go to an old-timey thing, possibly. If they made them think that they were like among guys with like giant mustaches, they might be.
I guess, yeah. I guess if we also sold beer like only growler sized, Then the straight men would still feel comfortable.
Right. Or fuck the straight men. Just they can wait outside.
Also that. I'm going to hit up Phil Rosenthal and ask if he will bankroll this.
Let's do that.
Okay. In the meantime, where can people find you on social media?
I am on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E. And just in case you want to listen to a podcast about gay TV shows, go to gayestepisodeever.com.
Which everybody should, because it's a really good podcast. And I know that you aren't actively doing Singing Mountain, but if anyone wants interesting background music while they're at home, Singing Mountain can provide that.
I do. Yeah, that's true. And I'm going to do, since I have nothing but time, I'm going to make a new episode of my video game music podcast. And people can listen to that and maybe feel better about stuff for an hour.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Drew.
Thank you, Sarsaparilla Catherine, which is what we're going to call the bar.
Well, there's a crazy daddy-o. Everybody loves him so. He's got a little ice cream shop on the corner of the block with a jukebox playing loud, making sodas for the crowd. They call him a soda popper pop. He's got a shop on the corner where the kids go to bop. They call him Soda Popper Pop. Play it cool after school, say about 3 o'clock. Strawberry, raspberry, lemon, and lime. Pops are making sodas all of the time. Rock and roll for only a dime. Say hello to Soda Popper Pop. Well, he's the only one on the street who makes a soda with a beat. Well, you ought to see him.
Hey, everybody, it's Catherine. Back to Cite My Sources. So one big help with this episode was SodaParts.com, which is an online soda fountain equipment retailer. Also, three books in particular were useful. One was Fizz, How Soda Shook Up the World. Another was I Hear America Talking. And the third was Sunday Best, A History of Soda Fountains. And I bet you can guess how Sunday is spelled there. Also, Pharmacy Times, which is a trade publication, and a site called History of Soft Drinks. Those were both very helpful. And finally, Collectors Weekly was a great resource for this episode because it has interviews with and essays by all kinds of enthusiasts and hobbyists and people who have spent their life studying whatever it is that their passion is. In this case, people who collect antique pharmacy items like pill bottles, the pills themselves, marble countertops, you name it. So that was great. The citations are all in the show notes and on smartmouthpodcast.com. You can join us on Instagram at SmartMouth Podcast, on Facebook in the private SmartMouth group, and on Twitter at SmartMouth Pod. The newsletter is smartmouth.substack.com. SmartMouth is a production of Table Cakes, a woman-owned Los Angeles-based podcast company. It is hosted and produced by me, Catherine Spires, and engineered by Mika Grimm. Check out all of our shows at tablecakes.com. A Table Cakes production.